And then fats and proteins next. And you don't have to be super, super rigid about the whole thing. Because again, even having fiber and fat and protein in the mix altogether is still going to slow down again that rush of glucose to your bloodstream.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Superwoman Wellness. I'm Dr. Taz. I've made it my mission throughout my career in integrative medicine to support women in restoring their health using a blend of Eastern medical wisdom with modern science. In this show, I will guide you through different practices to find your power type and fully embody the healthiest and most passionate version of you. I'm here for you, and I can't wait to get started.
Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Superwoman Wellness, where we are determined to bring you back to your superpowered self. All right, guys, confession time. I'm about to say a really bad word, so get ready for it, because you guys know I don't curse very much. But we're going to talk about carbs and how it's actually okay to eat a carbohydrate. Look, carbs have gotten all kinds of a bad rap for years now. And I think a lot of that bad rap has to do with the amount of processing the majority of our carbs go through, at least here in the United States. Some of you that follow me know that I just recently came back from London and had a completely different food experience there. But to help us with all the carb confusion and what to do with carbs, especially if you're having gut issues or autoimmune issues, I have an honored guest who's been with me before. Phoebe Lapine is here. Phoebe, I hope I'm saying your last name right. That's really embarrassing.
It's Lapine like the tree, Lapine. But 90% of people say it your way. So I'm used to it.
I also use Phoebe, so I'm always butchering last names. So Phoebe Lapine is here, and she has a brand new book coming out. She is a gluten-free chef and an author, and her new book is Carbivore, 130 Healthy Recipes to Stop Fearing Carbs and Embrace the Comfort Foods That You Love. I mean, this sounds heavenly. Phoebe is a food and health writer, a chef, a speaker, and the voice behind the award-winning blog, Feed Me Phoebe. She's the author of 4 books, including the forthcoming Carbivore and her debut memoir, The Wellness Project, an advocate for autoimmune disease, SIBO, and finding food freedom despite chronic illness. Phoebe is here with us today to help us understand carb confusion. Welcome to the show, Phoebe. Thank you for joining me again and help us out with this, right? So I sit there and do these intricate treatment plans in the practice, you know, and for our patients. And I actually will try to specify how many grams of carbs they have and what percentage of their calories should be carbohydrates. And it's interesting because so many people have truly dropped carbs and then they're kind of wringing their hands with not losing weight, or I don't feel good, or they're having reactive hypoglycemia, right? Where their blood sugar is just bottoming out in the middle of the night. And then when I'm doing this whole merging of Eastern and Western medicine, and I'm thinking through types of people, and I know you and I have talked about that before, but the folks that are Vata in Ayurveda, you know, they actually need carbohydrates. Like they shouldn't be staying away from carbs. So help us with this conversation. How do you step into it? What are your thoughts and what inspired you to write the book?
Yes. Yeah, so I've dealt with a few health struggles along the way. Back when I was 22, I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's thyroiditis. And at the time I had no idea what a thyroid was or what an autoimmune disease was. I was just, you know, a girl trying to make it as a chef in New York City and wearing myself into the ground. And so I think my first experience with kind of carb confusion was around doing an elimination diet and seeing a holistic doctor for the first time. And I discovered that gluten and I did not get along at all, as is the case for many people with Hashimoto's. And after I removed it, which was 13 years ago now, which is wild, and went through, you know, all of the stages of grief as someone who was very terrified of not being an omnivore, I kind of then fell down the rabbit hole of the wellness world and, you know, started to kind of swing to the other side of the equation. And there were just a lot of voices out there that were saying, oh, you need to do autoimmune paleo. You're not, you know, taking enough carbs out. You'll never get your thyroid antibodies down if you don't cut out all carbs. And then, of course, you know, in doing my research, I was like, oh, but you need carbs actually to produce thyroid hormones, and people who go too far, too low carb can end up, you know, in another ditch. So this book kind of came out of the aftermath of writing The Wellness Project and then kind of dealing with another big question around carbs when I dealt with SIBO myself and then did a ton of research and created a podcast and a lot of resources around that for people. And that's really kind of more of the nerdy side, I think, of the carb conversation. When we talk about the low FODMAP diet, we're talking about certain types of carbohydrates, not what people, I think of as carbs. Carbs is kind of a slang term, I would say, in the food world for, potatoes, bread, right. Pasta, kind of the more, they're actually starches, but what we think of as carbs. Yeah, exactly. But in the low FODMAP diet, people become a little afraid of certain types of carbohydrates, which are actually a lot of the healthy fibers and types of vegetables that make up, you know, a really well-balanced diet for most of us who aren't going through an acute issue. So this book kind of seemed like a great graduation point for both of those conversations, for the Hashimoto's folks and then also for the SIBO folks, because ultimately, you know, I do think that carbs are really important, especially for women, and we need to find that kind of Goldilocks solution that's right for us.
Oh my gosh. So you just said a lot in those couple minutes there. So let's unpack that. So first of all, carbs versus starch. Explain that.
Yes. So carbohydrates are the building blocks of all life on Earth. So if you were to truly go like off carbohydrates, I mean, there are some people who go on the carnivore diet, but I think you would be, you know, expediting your chance of mortality.
I'm not making you take sides, but what do you think of the carnivore diet anyways?
I mean, I get a lot of people who have doctors recommend it for SIBO, and I'm just like, why? I just don't find it necessary for any, I can't imagine it being truly necessary for anyone. And if you're going that extreme, if you have SIBO, you know, again, you have real gut issues, like you can't eat anything without reacting. You know, there's something called the elemental diet, which is like, I mean, a 2-week basically shake that you drink. Yeah. And that's not ideal either. But I think, I don't know, that at least is a stepping stone to coming back onto a more varied diet. But yeah, I think diversity is the spice of life and truly the number one thing that kind of everyone could apply as a golden rule of thumb. You know, we all, as you said, have our own individual frailties, need our own carb adventure. But I think, you know, diversifying the plants on our plate and not like, I guess, the animal protein would be my number one pick for people.
Yeah. Well, anyhow, not to send us off in a different direction, but carbs versus starch. So carbs, it sounds like you're saying the carbs that you're talking about are plant-based, have fiber, have a micronutrient and a macronutrient profile versus a starch, which I think of as fillers, right? Like your rice and your potato and those type of things. Am I differentiating that correctly?
Yeah, well, I still celebrate the kind of filler starches, because I think those are what are comfort foods for people. They're right. What are affordable for people. I think that's the other side of the whole low-carb conversation that really bothers me. It just feels extraordinarily privileged and, you know, it doesn't really take into account that there's a vast majority of the global population that does perfectly fine eating the majority of their calories from carbs. And I think, as you mentioned before, it's probably because they're not as processed to begin with. But, you know, we can find that balance in adding more fiber, fat, healthy fat, and protein, and kind of balancing our plate in other ways. So yeah, the book is organized by what are more traditional carbs, quote unquote. So oats, whole grains from around the world, rice, potatoes, pasta, bread, corn, legumes. But you know, I do think it's important to kind of differentiate, because fiber is also a carbohydrate, and fiber is kind of the most important thing to keep in mind when you're managing both your blood sugar and your gut health.
Definitely. And speaking of gut health for just a second, and you mentioned SIBO, you know, a couple of times here, and even Hashimoto's, which is autoimmune, as many people know by now. But, you know, when we're thinking about the gut, and the frailty of the gut, right? That either the lining is impaired, or the gut bacteria is out of balance, or you're lacking enzymes of some kind. You know, how you know, the literature in the early years of SIBO or discussion around SIBO was very anti-carb, quite honestly. It was like, mm-hmm, carbs are going to make you ferment. They're going to, you know, create this bacterial feeding frenzy of some kind. And that low FODMAP diet was so restrictive that majority of my patients honestly could not do it for very long. Like some that had a lot of willpower and a lot of determination could do it for a period of time. But I hate to say this too, like the results from it were temporary. They were not lasting, you know? So if someone listening to the show right now or watching knows that they have a gut issue, knows that they're prone to something like SIBO or just has a lot of like digestive symptoms, how do they navigate the carb conversation where they need the fiber? The fiber might make them feel really uncomfortable. What is your sort of advice to them?
I'm so glad you asked that question because it is really tricky. And I did want to speak to that population in the book as well, because especially I'm actually really glad that there's a lot more information out there about how we metabolize glucose and, you know, just the issue, the metabolic issues that can result from too much sugar, too many carbs and whatnot. But it kind of leaves the gut folks behind. And again, there's kind of a Goldilocks issue there too, especially for folks who can't just load their plate up with a ton of roughage and green vegetables and whatnot. Right. So some of my strategies that are kind of top of mind from my SIBO book is, you know, purees, cooking your vegetables. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not going to necessarily be as protective in puree form as it is, you know, eating a whole head of broccoli whole off the plate and forcing your body to do that, you know, breaking down into smaller fibrous mesh, I call the fibrous, sludge in your gut. But that's at least helpful from a nutrient standpoint and ensuring that you can keep your diet as diverse as possible. You can get all those nutrients. And then I think you can work your way up to some of the strategies that I talk about in carbivore. I mean, having your fiber first before you have higher carb ingredients, that's a big, big strategy. It's called food sequencing. There's been a few studies on it. And then I like to, like, kind of the strategies for my recipe development in the book were just to add carb companions. So I mentioned healthy fat, fiber and protein. So just making sure that you can offset the carbs with those macronutrients is going to slow down the carbs, your body's ability to break down those carbs into usable glucose and have that glucose flood your bloodstream. So I say the kind of the philosophy behind the book is to go slow carb instead of low carb.
I saw that. Yeah, I like that. Okay. So let's tease out slow carb a little bit, but I want to talk about food sequencing because I feel like people are asking me a lot of questions. My own husband's been asking me about that.
Good for him.
Talk about, well, that's a loaded good for him because that's a like, yay, you're on social media learning things, but you can't learn them from your wife. That's what that is. No, I'm glad.
I have that too in our household.
It's all of them. It's the dog, it's the kids, everybody. Like they get their information elsewhere, but that's okay. What I do want to understand, though, is this idea around food sequencing, right?
Yeah.
Talk to me a little bit about that. And is food sequencing different for the person with blood sugar instability versus the person with gut instability, or is it universal?
I mean, in terms of the metabolic effect, it's universal. But again, it's not a strategy that if you have gut issues and you really struggle with fiber that you need to employ. You know, I think all of these tools are just can be aspirational for some people. They're good to have in your toolkit. They're good for understanding your digestive system and how it relates to your blood sugar. But, you know, depending on where you are with healing your gut and where you are with your health and your digestive fire, I think, yeah, it's something you can pick and choose. But I'll give you a little overview. And I like to have the analogy of your intestinal wall as a fine mesh sieve. And so if you think about, you know, drinking pure juice, apple juice, let's say, and you pour it through the sieve, it's just going to be a waterfall. It's going to go straight through. But if you were to eat an apple or, you know, try and muddle an apple through that sieve, you're going to have the skin, you're going to have, well, maybe not the seeds, unless you eat apples differently than I do, but you're going to have that kind of fibrous sludge, and that's going to line the inside of the sieve. And even if you have some apple juice afterwards, pour some apple juice through, it's not going to be the waterfall that it was before. It's going to be a little bit more of a measured drip drip. And that's the thing, is that we need glucose in order to live. It's the issues come when we have too much of a good thing all at once. So when it's flooding our system, and we do know that that can happen. So if you drink sugar, essentially, so apple juice, on an empty stomach, that glucose can reach your bloodstream within 5 minutes. So it's very different, you know, having a juice or even a smoothie, because again, think about how that fiber is kind of pulverized into microscopic bits, than to eat a whole apple. So that there's a difference right there. And again, I kind of mentioned as a strategy for SIBO folks, you know, if you can't handle eating the whole apple or broccoli or whatever, you know, one way to do it is to puree it in a soup or whatnot. And that's still a strategy. This is, again, mm-hmm. something to keep in mind going forward. And the thing is that there are so many other strategies that don't even involve changing anything on your plate that you can also do to manage your blood sugar. And I think those are probably the ones that are a little bit more top of mind or accessible to people who also struggle with, you know, the fiber equation.
So what I'm hearing then is one of the essential components of food sequencing is to eat your high fiber foods first.
Yes.
Is that correct? Like maybe.
Yes. And then fats and proteins next. And you don't have to be super, super rigid about the whole thing. Cause again, right. even having fiber and fat and protein in the mix altogether is still going to slow down again, that rush of glucose to your bloodstream. So while fiber and protein can kind of slow down gastric emptying and slow down the whole digestive process in a good way, in terms of your blood sugar, maybe not in a good way if you have, again, like super stagnant digestive system right. to begin with. But they're not going to kind of create that fibrous, protective fibrous right. sludge on your intestinal wall. And so even using that analogy and describing it that way, you can understand that someone who has their bacteria in the wrong place, too far up their intestinal canal in the small intestines, why that could be really problematic, because that fiber is going to be, again, food for microbes that you don't necessarily want there. But it'll eventually, hopefully, in the best case scenario, if your digestive system's working properly, pass to your large intestine, because fiber is not something that we absorb at all through our small intestine. It just goes on its merry way and then becomes a food source for your microbiome in your large intestine, which is where you want it. It's, you know, where your immune system is moderated. I mean, all of those good critters have a ton of efficacies, including for blood sugar, which is the irony of the whole thing and kind of why I wanted to write this book that, you know, talked about both sides of the coin. Because, you know, I think a lot of people who share advice for just moderating the blood sugar, you know, it can point you towards more of a carnivore diet, because if you right. eat anything with glucose in it, you're gonna see a little spike on your continuous glucose monitor. It's just the nature of the beast. Every time we eat, our blood sugar goes up right. and then it comes down. And yes, I guess the only way to avoid that is to starve or to eat all meat. Although to some extent, your body is capable of turning that into glucose too. So anyway, I've lost my train of thought to some extent,
I think all that's important because, well, first of all, just going to the glucometer for a minute, and because I was just dealing with this yesterday, you are going to get a spike in your blood sugar when you eat, and that's normal. Yeah. I think people start to get really academic about this stuff and start to dissect it. But sort of my warning to everybody is, it should go up and it should come down. But if it's going up and it's staying up, yeah. then we know that that's a food that your body's having trouble metabolizing or whatever the case may be, you know? So it's more of looking at duration, not just at the temporary blips, which are completely normal. But my question was going to be, I'm just thinking about the tradition of eating and how people eat usually with bread first, right? Bread yeah. is usually served first. And that's a carb, but that's not the kind of carb you're talking about.
I mean, it is. I embrace bread, but that's exactly the wrong time to eat your right. bread is first from the bread basket. But we can look to so many other cultures for examples of food sequencing. It's like not a novel thing we just discovered in the lab. If you think about, you know, antipasti in Italy, or, you know, edamame in Japanese culture, yep. You have your edamame before you have your white rice. Sometimes you'll even have sashimi after that. So it's like your fiber, then your protein, and then you get to the white rice, and that's going to have less of an impact on your body. I know there are other examples that I can't quite think of, but yes, it's, I guess it's very Western world across the board to now start, your meal with the bread basket at a restaurant, but ideally you would wait on that and have it with your meal. But so yeah, having like a piece of crusty bread and using it to mop up, you know, a delicious soup. Like, I think that is totally in line with the carbivore philosophy, especially if that soup has, you know, a lot of really good chunky veg in there.
Yum. I'm getting hungry now. So does the carbivore philosophy talk about alcohol with your meals?
And
where does that fit in?
It does. So again, people, if you're just talking about blood sugar, I mean, in theory, you can have any type of alcohol that doesn't have a sweet mixer. But we do know that alcohol is not good for general gut health. And right. I think, yeah, the kind of data point that we forget about, and I mean, I don't know, I haven't analyzed the studies to a huge extent, and I don't know that they prove causation, but if you look at, you know, if you compare a lot of metrics for people with obesity and with diabetes, you'll see that having a diversity issue within their microbiome is a huge commonality. So I do think we know that for, I don't, again, who knows the mechanism, but having, you know, a diverse, healthy, well-functioning microbiome is going to help your blood sugar metabolism in the long term. So I think it's not getting too bogged down with, again, as you said, what's happening with your spikes on a daily basis to the point where you're like, oh, I should replace my whole apple with cheese, right. With like string right. cheese and like a paleo meat stick, because I don't think that's going to benefit you in the long term. Our gut health right. is really the pinnacle of so many bodily processes, and I think it should always be kind of the number one thing to take care of, and know that your blood sugar metabolism will kind of fall into place as a result.
I love that. Now, last question for you. What do you think is happening with all the reactive hypoglycemia, you know, all these women yeah. and some men that are just dropping, like the blood sugar is just bottoming out often in the middle of the night. What do you think is happening there?
Oh gosh, I think it would be so many things. And like we talked about, sorry, I didn't even finish your question really about alcohol, but so alcohol kind of, it's not good for gut health, but it's also not good for your sleep cycle. And your sleep cycle is so important, both for blood sugar metabolism and right. gut health. And, you know, our blood sugar is kind of naturally elevated overnight. So if we have some sort of spike as a result of, I don't know, a sugary beverage that we've had, or, you know, something coming from dinner, or just because, you know, alcohol can disrupt our REM cycles and cause us to wake up in the middle of the night, it all kind of blends together into the perfect storm the next day, into having, yeah. you know, not as much carb tolerance, not the ability to kind of eat the same carb filled things that we did the day before. And I mean, the reactivity is going to just be a lot more volatile. And then I think it's like a slippery slope always for me is like, then I'm going to want the caffeine. I'm going to mm-hmm. want, you know, I'm probably going to be craving more carbs just because my cravings are going to be kind of skyrocketing no matter what. So I think alcohol, obviously, I don't want to be the killer of all fun. There are dessert recipes in this book. There's no drink recipes, but, you know, everything in moderation. And it's right. just something to keep right. in mind that it's not like a get out of jail free card just because there's like no sugar content in vodka.
Right. Right. I get asked that all the time. Like, vodka's okay, right? And I'm like, oh, yeah. Still impacts your
people just want to give things a check mark, you know?
I know. I love this. Well, thank you so much for writing this book and for helping us clarify, you know, carbohydrate fear. I think there's just a lot of fear now, you know, around
Absolutely.
Carbs. And I think everyone thinks they're going to gain 10 pounds if they touch a carbohydrate. So I think discerning carbs from starch, understanding slow carb, understanding food sequencing, you know, understanding quality and processing. These are things that I think, you know, are really important in this conversation for sure.
Yeah.
If anyone has questions for you or wants to learn more, where can they connect with you and where can they find the book?
Yes. So I have tons of free recipes and resources on my site, feedmephoebe.com. But if you want to learn more about the book, you can go to carbivorecookbook.com. And I actually have a freebie for lunch month. It's a 2-week blood sugar boot camp that puts a lot of the tips in the book into kind of actionable daily emails. And so if you pre-order the book or order the book, you can get access to that right away in your inbox. And yeah, carbivorecookbook.com. You can find the info. And I'm also always on Instagram at Phoebe Lapine sharing fun little tips that involve gut health and blood sugar.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for joining me again. I appreciate it. And for everybody else watching and listening to this episode, thank you. And don't forget, you can rate and review the podcast. Just send me an email with a screenshot to hello@drtaz.com and I'll send you a free bottle of Boost. All right. We'll see you guys next time.